Time No Longer, a novel, written by Taylor Caldwell and read by Dennis Kleinman.
1. The city was getting ready for Easter. Karl Ehrlich saw rows of white candles tipped with yellow flames in many windows. The snow was falling like flocks of great silent white moths, and the red roofs of the houses were packed with cotton. The winter had been long and hard, and still lingered in this last snow through which the scents and humid breath of spring could not yet come. Karl liked walking. He had left his car at home. He liked the feel of the snow against his face, the cold, bright wind of night filled with glittering and minute stars. He heard children's voices from somewhere, clear and thrilling. His feet left imprints in the snow. It seemed wrong to break that gentle whiteness. Windows filled with amber light shone out at him. He saw the white curtains, stiff with starch in preparation for the holidays. He could see people moving about inside the houses, children with yellow plaited hair, jumping up into their parents' arms for a goodnight kiss. People laughed in doorways, lamplight behind them, for it was not so very cold. German laughter, he thought, in spite of old agony and new fear. Bells tinkled down quiet, dimly lighted streets. An old man trundled a two-wheeled cart ahead of him. His shoulders and cap were white. He kept shaking the snow from his face and grinning. His cheeks were red as small wrinkled apples. He wheeled carefully, for the cart was full of dead feathered poultry. Above, the sky was dark and starless, and the snow kept falling and filling the air with its pure breath. A young girl hurried past, glancing at Karl with shy, smiling eyes. She had a vivid scarlet shawl over her head and shoulders, spangled with snow dust. When she ran, her skirts fluttered, showing sturdy legs and white cotton stockings. A servant girl, running blithely in the last snow. He passed the tall young policeman at the corner and acknowledged the latter's salute with a kind smile and inclination of his head. The young policeman looked clean and scrubbed and sharp-angled. His uniform was old and patched at the elbows, decently and without shame. Karl sighed, jingled the money in his pockets. Money was scarce these days. He felt guilty because he and his family still had money. So few honest people had money in Germany now, and yet there were no beggars. Germans did not beg. The thought made him think of his twin brother Kurt, to whose home he was going tonight. He frowned uneasily. Kurt had said that only yesterday, Germans do not beg, but he had added with stiff grimness, they take. Karl shook his head, pursing his lips. He even smiled a little ruefully. Kurt was remembering the Schloss, which they had had to give up. He never forgot the Schloss. If they had lost all their fortune instead of over half, and had been able to retain that mouldering old Schloss, Kurt would have been satisfied. To him it represented something that was himself, yet greater than himself. Without it, he was only a man, only Kurt Ehrlich. A man like other men. To Kurt Ehrlich, with his innate hatred of other men, that was intolerable. He could no longer look at his acquaintances arrogantly and speak of the Schloss. He was not the kind to remind others of his own past illustriousness, or rather his family's illustriousness. He had to keep silent, or merely boast of things he had which he shared with others. Boasting, too, was no part of him. He never envied other men their money, for money was nothing to him, only pride. He had always despised and pitied men who had nothing but money. They were poor indeed, he often said. So without the Schloss, he was a man without a country, a man without a soul. He never spoke of it, though it was always in his mind, and a gloomy shadow of it was always in his deep-set small blue eyes. Damn the Schloss, thought Karl. He had never liked the Schloss. He loved the Rhine Valley below it, so golden, so green, so vast and broad and silent.